The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. We can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. One with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Well, after quite a few major events happening here in the last 5 weeks since we started our spring term, we're all a little tired, and I was struggling with what to talk about today and wondering if I could string any words together, feeling somewhat fatigued. But I thought I'd reflect on just what's been going on. We've had a couple of our animals die, cats, one of them with us for 17 years. We've had one of our dear senior monks die, lay minister. And of course, various ailments that we are experiencing as a result of aging. And today, of course, we have an accident, but fortunately, no injury. And also reflecting on what's going on in the world, what we hear in the news. And so it led me to reflect on what really helps our training with all these matters. And of course, then I remember that we're coming up to our precepts retreat. So of course, that's the answer: precepts. And it's interesting how that happens in our daily lives. There's always something coming up that helps us with what's going on. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of those reflections and the merit of the precepts, and just in general terms, the precepts as a gateway into the path of liberation. Because some time ago I gave a talk on another gateway, one of Rev. Master Ji used to say, one of the most common doorways into training or liberation, as I see it, from suffering, is just being present and meditation, not grasping after things, not pushing them away. For me, this was an important, and probably still is, a very significant practice, because when I came into training, realized after a short while that I actually wasn't very present in my life at all, and that was quite revolutionary for me to start being present in my life, to actually make use of it, and then begin to tap into what my true life is, the life of Buddha. Well, the precepts are another one of those gateways. Reverend Master Jiu always said that that was her doorway into deepening her training. And as we all, most of us who have read How to Grow a Lotus Blossom, know that this was very, very important to her awakening experience back in 76 when she was close to dying and came out of it. And I've often thought of her statement in that regard and have found that that is true for me as well. That and we often have it, people ask us, how can I deepen my training? Or what do I need to do to deepen my training? And the precepts are always a doorway into that, that we have available to us. So I consider that to be one of the gateways into the path of liberation. Looking at the news recently, it has become even more important in my mind to take seriously following precepts. That becomes very apparent when we hear insults being flung about and by prominent personalities. And forgive me for noticing that, but can't help but notice it. And other really sometimes very awful things going on. The harmful consequences of ignorance about the merit of keeping to the precepts are in the news all the time. And again, another thing that people will often ask us is, what do we do when we see and hear of people breaking the precepts? How do we respond to that? People are upset, people are distressed, there's a lot of fear. And again, the precepts are an answer. Back in 1975, when I was a novice monk And there was the whole Watergate scandal going on here. You may have heard me talk about this before. It was one of my first lessons and precepts with Reverend Master Jiyu. And we were all very liberal-minded people, and there was this bad guy doing all this awful stuff. Of course, it was awful stuff. But she gave us some very important teaching on how to see this person as a Buddha, showing us what not to do. And that has been a very significant guideline for me, because it stops me getting into judgment. I can see clearly that there is a mistake in training there, that there is a breakage of precepts. But the lesson for me, the attitude that I can adopt, is one of not going there with the person or with the group or whatever it happens to be. That in itself is huge. And something that we can always do. I'm going to quote a little bit from one of my favorite books, Roar of the Tigress, Volume 2, on Dogen's chapter, Refraining from All Evil Whatsoever, and Reverend Master Jiyu's commentary on it. So this noticing what is not good to do and not doing it, and sitting still in that place where we don't follow that stream, if you like, which is so tempting and not always obvious unless we're meditating. The important first step is just to sit still. And as an addendum to that lesson that Reverend Master gave us, which again has always stuck with me, was to, not feed the fire, not fuel the fires of greed, anger, and delusion. And that's still a guideline for me today. If I get confused or I'm not sure what to do next, just look at my greed, anger, and delusion. And there's always something there that needs to be worked on. And so never unemployed in that regard. But just to sit still with it, to not feed the fire. If you don't put fuel on a fire, it will eventually die out. And that's a very encouraging fact right there, you know. So just to sit still and not feed our delusion or our greed or our anger in itself is huge, actually. Dogen talks about it in this chapter, in Reverend Master Dyes, we call this chapter The Deeper Meaning of the Precepts. So it's not a matter of getting in there and trying to get rid of the evil, get rid of the person doing the evil necessarily, which is perhaps a tendency of the worldly mind before we learn how to meditate. It's more a matter of ourselves refraining from evil. To quote Dogen, and I'm coming into the middle of a passage here, those who have arrived at this point in time of following precepts may reside in some place where all manner of evil is going on, or they may be traveling back and forth there, or they may be confronted with conditions where all manner of evil actions may be going on, yet they do not perform such evil actions themselves, because they are clearly manifesting the strength from their self-restraint. They do not speak of evil actions as, in and of themselves, evil actions, for there is no such thing as a predestined tool for evil. At such a point in time, the principle that evil does not break a person will be understood. The principle that a person does not defeat evil will also be crystal clear. And Reverend Master Jiyu comments here, we should know that it is our pure intent, our constant attempt to refrain from evil, which is the greatest of all training. And when we speak of evil in Buddhism, you can think of it as refraining from doing harm. Obviously, that which creates suffering, acting out of ignorance of our Buddha nature, you know, and on a fundamental level. Also, some people might have difficulty with the idea of refraining. And I've heard one senior monk talk about it as, you can look at it the other way up, which is giving, you know, refraining from doing harm, refraining from evil is actually an act of giving of oneself, letting go of the self. Yeah. So Rev. Master goes on to say, as I have said many times, one cannot have a great understanding of the truth until one has rooted out the attachments. And this is actualized by the constant attempt to cease from evil, the will to cease from evil. So the fundamental precept, just going on throughout our days, of not feeding that fire of greed, anger, and delusion, as Achalanatha shows us how to do, actually, in meditation. In the passage above that we've just, you'll note that Dogen, that I've just quoted, you'll note that Dogen speaks of self-restraint, not of attempting to destroy or defeat evil. We attempt to destroy things so as to be rid of them forever, but it does not work that way. We need to be able to learn to live with them with self-restraint. This is what I mean when I say that the attachments must be rooted out. I do not mean that the attachments shall never again arise. I mean that training is constant, practice is constant, refraining from all evil is constant. It is also very important to remember the principle that evil does not break a person. We all have a lot of fear about that, and I think there's a lot of fear about that in our country, maybe throughout the world, that we'll be somehow broken in some fundamental sense. Doesn't mean we won't be killed or damaged. Obviously, we have to take care. Obviously, we have to be deeply concerned, do the best we can to help. But does it actually break us? Does it have to? No. Nothing has the power to do that. So I'll read that again. It is also very important to remember the principle that evil does not break a person. Nothing has the power to do that. Training and practice are always possible. And once refraining from evil has become our way of life, the strength from our training and practice, to quote Dogen, make it possible for us to encounter all manner of situations without becoming distressed by them, judgmental of them, or ourselves for that matter, or corrupted by them. So that is a very encouraging teaching. And I long to be thus. I'm not there yet. At the same time, I know it to be true for myself. I myself grew up in a family that grew up as young teenagers, my parents in Germany during World War II. So I know a little bit about the kind of response one can give to evil. Well, we've had all these funerals lately. It's been an interesting reflection for me to again recall that our funeral ceremonies are ordination ceremonies usually. When we do a funeral for a senior monk, as we did recently, it is presumed that they already have the precepts in their blood and bones, so we just kind of nudge them along their way and celebrate with them as they step into nirvana. So again, the precepts being all important. Meditating with these deaths is certainly, and even this little cat that I was looking after for well over 14 years, I think, has really helped put it in my face more clearly, helped me to look at what really matters. Once again, makes it easier to let go for me of clinging to extraneous stuff, delusive physical, emotional, mental habits, just chips away at it. So we can take advantage of that when we encounter these losses in our lives. It doesn't mean we won't grieve. We might be sad. But there's just amazing teaching in it. And with the precepts, we know that we will help the person come to their true home. These deaths have made me appreciate more deeply the value of our practice of meditation and following the precepts, and come to realize that this is indeed the greatest merit in this life. Those of you who were here yesterday heard the precepts being given to the newly dead, Dr. Jean Cleaver, and we also took them together at the ceremony. And this is what has helped him to go into wherever he is going with a completely clean slate. So again, in our tradition, at these critical times in our training, we do an ordination ceremony. I'll read just this little passage, one of my favorites from the funeral ceremony, which those of you who were here yesterday heard. Because of the compassion of the Eternal, and it's repeated, because of the compassion of the Eternal, because of the compassion, the great compassion of the Eternal, when someone receives these precepts of the Buddha, he or she attains to Buddhahood, being one with the Eternal. Buddhahood is equal to enlightenment. Thus, this one has truly become a baby Buddha. So just as Dogen talks about training and enlightenment being one, this is what, you know, very much applies to precepts. And I think we have to be careful not to undervalue our training in the precepts, that when we turn toward the precepts in thought and body, speech, and mind, that in fact we are manifesting enlightenment in that very simple act, however small it may be. Today we celebrated a transfer of merit ceremony and have dedicated the merit of our chanting of scriptures, Dharma teachings of the scriptures, for the benefit of those whose names were recorded and all beings in need of merit, as Reverend Master Mahan dedicated, both known and unknown. And it's our sincerity in reciting, in hearing these teachings, and our willingness to share them in a spirit of loving kindness and compassion with others that creates merit, which opens our hearts and thereby also flows, as I experience it, flows into all the painful crevices where help and healing is needed, wherever that might be. Or you can see, think of it as the light of your Buddha nature. Open the door there for others to benefit from it. Guide them on their way. And and the ceremony, as I see it, and reflecting on the precepts, is also a taking refuge in the three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha together for the benefit of ourselves and others. In that sense, it's an expression of the precepts in action, in that we celebrate together harmoniously as best we can, and trust of each other, with faith in that which is greater than all of us. We put aside our self-centered concerns for this time and offer any goodness from our training to others. If you have a ceremonial position, as the monks might have, you very quickly find out if you're not considerate of the others that you're working with in the ceremony, or you're not tuned into them, you're not working harmoniously with them, it becomes apparent very quickly in a ceremony. Sometimes we'll make mistakes, and we do the best we can to graciously keep going and not make a fuss over them or criticize each other about little mistakes that are made, but rather keep to the attitude of the precepts of not being judgmental and of offering our actions for the greater good. So it's a very important teaching for us doing ceremonies together, actually, and for you also. I'm sure you experience this when you come here to a ceremony. The ceremony offers us a window into seeing how to train and follow the precepts in our daily lives. And I think just doing them together, it trickles into our daily lives. How to approach the next situation, how to work more harmoniously with others. Here we are, each of us has a different appearance, different abilities, a different voice, different voices harmonizing our own circumstances and karmic conditions. And throughout the ceremony, we together express our common heartfelt intention to relieve the suffering of this world of sorrow. That's a big thing. It's really something to cherish. So I feel that this precept that we have invoked together is a pure precept, the source of true merit. Well, at the risk of overquoting Reverend Master Jiyu, of course I could read this whole chapter to you because I love it, but I'll just quote a little bit. Actually, this will be from Dogen, first of all. So Dogen says, now in terms of the second pure precept, doing only good, uphold and practice all that is good. This, all that is good, refers to the quality of being good among the three qualities of the three pure precepts. Although all that is good resides within the quality of being good, this does not mean that what is good already exists somewhere and is waiting for someone to put it into operation. It requires our training and our willingness. At the very moment when someone does good, there's nothing good that does not come forth. Now that's an interesting fact, isn't it? An encouraging one. Although the myriad expressions of goodness are without an outer form, when good is done, it attracts goodness faster than a magnet attracts iron. Even the strength amassed by the karma from the great earth with its mountains and rivers, as well as from the world with its nations and countries, and I'll add all its troubles, will never hinder the accumulating of good. So there you go. You've got Dogen's authority. So what he's, rather, you know, without reading the whole chapter to you, he's pointing out, Dogen and Reverend Master Meon, Reverend Master Meon points this out too, actually, but Reverend Master Jihyu, I was wondering if I'd have enough of a brain to put this together, but our ability, and this has certainly been my experience, and a very liberating experience it is, our ability to follow the precepts is not dependent on what is going on in the world. You know? Now, of course, we're going to get battered about. It doesn't mean that abuse doesn't happen and that we don't do our best to prevent it and help each other. But think about that. Our training is not dependent. Our ability to take the precepts is not dependent on what's going on around us. So we do have those choices. Now, it takes some time in training to realize this, and really I see training as an ever-deepening process of realizing that, which I, you know, again, Reverend Master hammered into us, you know, training is endless, so don't think you're kind of getting to a place where you don't have to do this anymore. It's endless. But nonetheless, that's actually comforting in itself, because rather than kind of looking for a place where we can put our feet up and have it all made, we can enter into this flow, this great flow of training, of following precepts, of living the life of Buddha. And I will say that even right at the very beginning, for those of you who are new to practice of precepts, right at the very beginning of turning towards a precept, we already experience positive change. We go in that direction. Or just simply taking refuge in the Sangha, just simply coming to a Dharma talk or a ceremony or asking for sanzen or telling somebody something that you're struggling with and accepting some help with it. Personally, I find that, again, just being mindful on a very simple level of greed, anger, and delusion arising is just a very simple way of into preceptual living. You know, I can always look at what is going on in my mind right now. It doesn't involve any great heroic deeds. If there's irritation over something, I've got a precept to deal with that. I'm not being angry, even, you know, and that becomes more and more subtle as we go on. I have a precept that I can take refuge in. I can sit still and not buy into that. Yeah. It will be uncomfortable for a bit, but I know with continued training that it will pass. Like everything else, anger and greed and delusion actually are just as transient. And will lose their power if not, as I mentioned before, not fed and acted upon. So this truly is, for me, a gateway into liberation that's available to us all the time. And even if we blow it and we make some mistakes and we do indulge our greed, anger, and delusion, at any point we can stop and turn in that direction and stop feeding it. The more we do it, the more this becomes normal. It's not something that requires much more than a slight turn in the direction of the Buddha within ourselves. Well, let's see. Okay, this will be my last longer quote from Reverend Master Jiu, which I think is an important, brings out some important points here about how to follow the precepts in our world. So Reverend Master is commenting on Reverend Master Dogen, as with things not to be done, there is simply that which is good to do. And the power of doing this good cannot be overemphasized. And as with evil, what is perceived as being good, in quotes, will vary according to the social structure of the time and the political situation. For example, what the monks of one monastery may do is sometimes thought of as good by one person and as not good by others. Some Buddhist religious orders go out and engage in political or social demonstrations. By some people, this will be seen to be good. By others, it will not be. As with evil, in quotes, no act is good, in quotes, in an eternal and unmoving way, in the sense that it is so viewed by a god, for the unborn is, and neither judges nor views. And there is the essence of simply being good to do. The intent to do good, like the intent to refrain from evil, is an important part of this. Furthermore, the principle of doing good can run contrary to some of the prevailing theories of morality and law in a given country. At the same time, Buddhism has always taught respect for the laws of the land. If we perceive that a law operates against what is good, in quotes, we work within that system to change the law, not to have a riot. The truth can be voiced in all times and at all places. Just its manner and form are different according to circumstances. So that's helps to explain. And, you know, sometimes I've been asked by people of other religions, you know, what do Buddhists believe in? What do you believe about abortion? Or what do you believe about homosexuality or this or that, the other issue that they might be dealing with in their religion? And I've often been sort of stumped. You know, this was in my younger years. I would often get asked this, and I don't think we have a position. You know what I mean? We don't have a position. Yes, of course, there are many examples from the past, from the Buddha's life and other masters and practitioners over 2,500 years that we consult and follow, take refuge in. But really, we're more concerned with what's helpful and what's good and what's kind in the situation, and we apply the precepts. In one circumstance, it may be good for a woman to have an abortion. In another, it may not. But that isn't necessarily going to be a statement that all of Buddhism will agree with in each circumstance. So it does require of us to be spiritual adults, as Reverend Master Jiu used to say. We have to find out for ourselves. Sometimes it can make us look to some people in the world to be a bit wishy-washy, but that's not the point at all. It's just that we're kind of trying to sit still with what is good at this time, in this place, in this circumstance, for this person. Yeah. What is the fundamental good? What is the true precept here? And that requires a little more work and maybe a little more courage. But boy, is it ever! It's great. It's good. It's truly liberating. So I highly recommend it, however challenging it is at times. But and it's also actually, I should say, doable. It's doable. Yeah, you don't have to carry around a whole collection of conventions necessarily and rules that you have to fit everything into. On the other hand, I'm not saying that manners and conventions are useless. They are very useful at times. Of course, we just look at the Buddha's lifetime. There were many conventions at that time that could be quite different. You know, the stories of, the famous one about I'm not sure I'm remembering her name. Is it Amapali, the courtesan who was became a disciple of the Buddha, initially a lay disciple, and eventually became an arahant. And in his culture, it wouldn't have been, it would have been quite normal to have courtesans, you know. And we have a, quite a judgmental attitude towards prostitution, of course. And I'm not encouraging prostitution, but at the same time, how different, you know, that was. And the conventions at that time, yeah. And how difficult is it now for people who have come out of those lifestyles to feel that they can even approach training, you know. So hopefully through our training, through our going through this gateway, keeping this open, we can make it possible for others to do so as well. And that's it for me for today. Thank you.